Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. A recent welcome to the Local Talk team has been Dennis Hart, longtime journalist. And on Friday, Dennis is giving us a roundup of the news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other surrounding newspapers. Dennis, thank you for joining us again on Friday.
Ursula, a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. Well, we'll take a look at the top stories this week in the Ames Tribune and in some of the outlying weekly papers. On Tuesday, the big story in the Trib was that a local plumbing company named DrainTech is going to break ground on a new 25,000-square-foot facility in the southeast corner of Ames late next week. Co-owner Mike Badger says the new 7-acre location on South Bell Avenue will be enough for his company to expand on-site for the next several years. The new $3 million building will house DrainTech's ongoing shop operations and act as a showroom for products it sells to nearby companies. Badger said the company outgrew its current 5,400-square-foot facility on Ford Street, which was built in 1997, for $200,000. Badger says his company may add a couple of new employees, maybe three, about a year after it settles into the new building. So good news for Ames and good news for DrainTech. And a heartwarming good news story on the front of the Tribune on Tuesday. After a nearly two-hour search, a Gilbert first grader was found safe in her family's backyard after elementary school principal Stacy Edwards said the student got off at the wrong bus stop on Friday afternoon, and that led to a little bit of temporary panic. Word of the missing student quickly spread, and bus drivers, neighborhood residents, and store employees all took part in the search. She said it was comforting to know the amount of support there was in the community. Now, according to Edwards, the child's father was waiting for her at the bus stop near the Fairway grocery store in Casey's General Store on Bloomington Road when he noticed that she did not get off the bus. Well, the problem was the child had gotten off at another stop and walked back to her own home. So she was there safe, but nobody knew that. So for a few minutes, everybody went into full alert. Everybody started searching. Everything seemed to work very well. And a neighbor saw the child playing, and things turned out well. Good news indeed. On Wednesday, the big story in the Tribune, Board of Supervisors discussing a potential closure of a bridge that spans over Squaw Creek north of Ames. Story County Engineer Darren Moon and the people who live near the bridge told the supervisors that they would prefer closing the bridge on West 190th Street between 505th and 510th Avenues. According to Moon's presentation, the bridge is susceptible to flooding and needs repairs. A replacement bridge could cost millions of dollars. Now, the supervisors took no official action Tuesday, but all three were unanimous in preferring the bridge stay in place for the immediate future so it could be used by pedestrians and bicyclists. The board would also have to decide at some point, if it does close the bridge, where to officially close West 198th Street on either side of the bridge. Now, that section of West 190th extends west of George Washington Carver Avenue and leads to Prairie Moon Winery and Alluvial Brewing Company, so lots of folks use it to get out there. Supervisors will have to make a decision on this in the future. Also, Wednesday in the Tribune, what happened Tuesday at the Ames City Council meeting? Tribune reporter Dan Micah and I were both at the meeting. It was a very, very quick one, 5 minutes perhaps, because they had a very small agenda. Among the things they did, they unanimously approved fireworks licenses for Iowa State football game days on September 2nd, the 9th, September 28th, October 14th, October 28th, and November 11th. That means there will be fireworks when the Cyclones do well, and now they can do it legally because the City Council approved the use of those fireworks. The Council also approved the sale of city-owned property in the 300 block of Wellens Drive to Habitat for Humanity. The City and Habitat agreed last year to a price of $30,000. The City had originally purchased the property 7 years ago for $107,000 as part of the Acquisition Reuse Program. And under that program, the City purchases unused lots or dilapidated single-family homes and resells them to nonprofits that then turn them into low-income or affordable housing. Also on the front page of the Trib on Wednesday, school board candidates, 2 weeks left until the election, the four Ames school board candidates spent the early hours of Tuesday night not at another open forum. They were at a bar. That's right. For a couple of hours, Monique Benkin, Jeanette Colkin, Colton, Gina Perez, and incumbent Tim Rasmussen got to float around London Underground on Ames's Main Street, very well-known location. They were visiting with voters, sometimes with a drink in hand. And it was all a planned event. At its peak, about 50 people filled the bar, the whole idea being for the candidates to get closer to the people and for the people to be able to talk to the school board candidates in a one-on-one basis. 4 years ago, when incumbent Tim Rasmussen first ran for the board, there were not events like this. This time around, he said he got to talk to about such things as the Ames High School project and the future search for a new superintendent on a one-on-one basis. And he said, it's great. I'm getting to talk to people in a more casual atmosphere. On Thursday, the Tribune, speaking of school board elections, reported that with a couple of weeks left, and again, the election is September 12th, Story County voters have requested more than 150 absentee and early voting ballots for the election. The public has been able to vote early. Early voting has been taking place since August 14th, and you can vote early at the offices in Nevada, the school offices, or rather the county offices in Nevada, or you can submit your absentee ballot in person or by mail. So far, voters across the county's seven school districts have returned 73 completed ballots. Doesn't sound like a lot, but at least it's a start. Ames Community School District voters so far have requested 85 early voting and absentee ballots. Colonesco Community School District voters have asked for 44. 11 ballots have gone to Gilbert voters, 10 being sent to the public in the Nevada Community School District, and voters in the Ballard and Roland Story School Districts have requested 4 ballots each. Now, voters can hand-deliver their absentee ballots to the county offices at 900 6th Street in Nevada until 8 o'clock on September 12th. Mail-in ballots are due at the county office by September 15th, postmarked no later than the 11th. The last day to request a mailed absentee ballot is September 8th. Now, unfortunately, school board elections tend not to have big turnouts. It's impossible to say how this turnout's going to be based on absentee ballot requests, but voters generally do not show up for school board elections. For example, 2011, only 16.5% of voters went to the polls in Ames when a bond issue for what turned into the elementary school project was on the ballot. Then in 2015, with 5 candidates running for 4 spots, only 6% of Ames voters turned out. Hopefully this year there will be more of a turnout. The election, September 12th. Also on Thursday in the Tribune, Innovative Technologies, a maker of industrial-sized centrifuges, has announced plans to move its operations from Humboldt to Huxley. Technology President Nick Scow said the company wanted to move from North Central Iowa to Huxley because it's outgrown its 7,500-square-foot facility and wanted faster access to major highways. The company's going to build a 15,000-square-foot building in Huxley's Blue Sky Commons, the city's industrial park, and move 8 current full-time employees to the area. Good news for Huxley, good news for Innovative Technologies. The company, by the way, builds and repairs centrifuges for ethanol producers, food companies, various manufacturers, also offers flooring repair and coating services. West Lincoln Way Project. There's been a long, long, long road construction project going out that way near campus town. Well, guess what? The second phase of the project is now underway, and officials say that work could be completed maybe by the end of October. Not next month, October. They are now widening the south side of Lincoln Way west to Franklin Avenue. Construction of this phase is expected to last 4 to 6 weeks. The first phase of the project, started in July, was on the south outside lane of West Lincoln Way. Bottom line, if you're going out that way, you're going to have some traffic and you're going to be delayed. Ames residents going to have opportunity to go to an important meeting on Tuesday, September 12th at Hickory Grove Park. The meeting is about what's happening at the park, a major project including lake drawdown, dredging, fish stocking, and more. That is September 12th, a meeting at Hickory Grove Park. It is free. You can go and weigh in on this project starting at 6:30. Stories you're going to see in this morning's Ames Tribune. Among them, Ames firefighters spent about 45 minutes last night at the Grandin Funeral Home here in Ames, an equipment malfunction. It caused a very small fire. No one was injured, and there was minimal damage. And the Ames Parks and Recreation Department is going to hold a costume contest and a show. They're going to show a movie at Banshell Park this evening. The movie is The Princess Bride. It's an acquired taste. If you have that taste, you can go out and get dressed as somebody from the movie. The reason they're doing this is because the movie came out 30 years ago. It's all free. Going to have free cookies and a couple of other things, free of charge. The costume contest starts at 7:15, the movie at 8:15 at Banshell Park. Be there if you like the Princess Bride movie. Ames Police reminding people, since tomorrow night is the first football game of the season for Iowa State, traffic's going to be a mess. So what they're going to do is urge people coming from the north to get off on 13th Street from Highway 35 instead of going down to Highway 30. And they are going after the game to close the eastbound on-ramp to Highway 30 from South Dayton Avenue to prevent an influx of merging traffic. They're expecting 60,000 people out there. It's going to be kind of a big, big event, maybe a mess, and you know there's going to be a traffic problem out there. So why not just go early and do the wise thing? And finally, from the Trib, Labor Day closing. Monday is Labor Day, and some things will not be open. Ames Public Library and Bookmobile won't be open. Resource Recovery Plant, not open. Community Center and Weight Room Facilities, Municipal Pool in the Ames ISU Ice Arena, not open. For a lot of you, this will be important. SciRide will not be operating buses on Monday, September 4th, this coming Monday for Labor Day. However, for those of us who like to play golf or perhaps swim, Homewood Golf Course in the Furman Aquatic Center will be open on Monday, September 4th. Perhaps I'll see you out there somewhere. Now let's take a look around at some of the weekly papers. The Nevada Journal, the big story, front page, Nevada Journal today about a new librarian going to be taking over in the Nevada Public Library. Her name's Shanna Spear. She has been the assistant library director for several years. She was recently hired for the top position, replacing longtime library director Beth Williams, who retired this summer. Now, Shanna Spear knows about the Nevada Library. She was a 2001 graduate of Colonesco High School. She'd not only visited the library, she had worked there as a teenager. It was her goal to come back and become the librarian. She's done it. As for the future of the library, she says one of the big projects she hopes to get started is a digitalization of the Nevada newspapers, mostly the Nevada Journal, which had this story. Going way back in time, she says that would be great for people wanting to research history and their families, and she is right. Also in the Journal this week, the City Council in Nevada has decided to reduce the days and times it will allow fireworks this coming December into January. Fireworks will only be allowed to be used in the Nevada city limits for 4 days in December, December 29th, 30th, and 31st, and on January 1st. On all those days except New Year's Eve, fireworks will be allowed from 5 to 9 o'clock. On New Year's Eve, well, they'll go a little bit longer, 5 p.m. until 12:30 a.m. Now, previously, fireworks were allowed from December 18th all the way through January 4th, but after six weeks of fireworks allowed this summer, the city took a survey and they saw that residents said, maybe that's a little bit too much. You have all this during the summer and all this during the wintertime. Why don't we cut it down? And so the council has decided to do that in the winter here. They took no steps on the summer fireworks because their city manager, Matt Martison, said, let's hold off. The state may do something on that. And so they have held off. But for now, you're only going to be able to use fireworks 4 times in Nevada at the end of the year. One more quick story in the Nevada Journal. A Nevada man's going to be featured at the upcoming Nebraska Storytelling Festival. Dan Bagley, going to be one of 5 featured storytellers at the September 9th Moonshell Storytelling Festival in Omaha. It's put on by Nebraska Story Arts. He's a member of the Des Moines Two Rivers Story Spinners and the Northlands Storytelling Networks. He's a longtime storyteller, tells stories about family life and all of this. So he's going to be there, and good for you, Dan, and do a great job. We will be rooting for you. Big story in the Boone Republican News over in Boone now, in Boone County. The Boone City Council again discussed the city's rental code at its most recent council meeting. That code's caused some mixed reactions. At the meeting, Boone City Attorney Jim Robbins told the council it does have the discretion to impose changes on the $300 late fee that's been imposed on rental owners who do not properly register their property. But he said, if you do make exceptions to that $300 fee, in his words, it's going to be virtually impossible for staff to determine what penalty should be imposed and when they should be. So the council took that under advisement. Boone School Board candidates had a public forum recently. 6 candidates competing for 2 at-large seats. Among the topics at the forum, declining enrollments, budgets, bullying, facilities, quality of education. The election coming up on September 12th, as are all of the school board elections in the state of Iowa. That's the day when school board elections take place. One more major story at the Boone Republican News this week, Puffer Billy Days. Yeah, that's a big one. Gaining steam. The 41st Annual Pufferbilly Day Celebration, which celebrates the Boone Railway, going to take place Thursday through Sunday, September 7th through the 10th. It is a big deal in Boone. There will be a carnival, a quilt show, bingo, a disc golf tournament, a craft fair, a spelling bee, a parade, a beer tent. You get the idea. Lots of things going on there. 5K, 10K run. I wonder if they have a small, slow walk. I can do that one. All of this taking place in downtown Boone, September 7th through the 10th. And let's take a look at the Story City Herald. Story City Herald. Front page, big story this week, the biggest one. Improvements to downtown Story City spurred on by an urban renewal grant. This is indeed a big deal for that lovely community. Story City has received a $75,000 urban renewal grant to improve its downtown. Combined with matching funds from the city and donations, the Greater Chamber Connection now has just more than $100,000 to spend on its Main Street District. That money is going to go to several projects. About half is going to be used to buy and install year-round holiday lighting at the tops of the downtown buildings. That's going to be pretty. The rest of the funds are going to be used to buy bike racks, garbage cans, benches, and history plaques. So Story City, about to get a very nice sprucing up. And so is Gilbert. Story County is going to contribute $58,000 to a very big project, nearly $2 million, to resurrect more than two blocks of Main Street in Gilbert. Starting at Matthews Drive and extending north past 2nd Street, the city plans to remove the existing street service, add a new storm sewer, along with possibly a new water main, upgrade a parking area, and design a sidewalk. So Story City and Gilbert, you're about to get even prettier, and we'll be up there to see that. We'll like that. Story City Police Department and other police departments all around the area putting out an important reminder for all of us over the next few days. Law enforcement agencies all around the state are going to be stepping up their enforcement now through Labor Day. And the reason, of course, is because, unfortunately, the Labor Day holiday around this state and every other state has become one of the deadliest times of the year for drunk driving fatalities. Now, their tips for this weekend are so obvious that even I can understand them, but they have to repeat them anyway. Don't drink and drive. It seems obvious. If you do drink, designate a sober driver to get you home safely, and more important, to get you home and not get everybody else home who might be in your way home safely. If you see a drunk driver, contact your local law enforcement agency and do it immediately. Take the keys away and make arrangements to get your friends home if they have been drinking. That can be the toughest thing to do because you don't want to offend them. They're going to get upset. Guess what? It could save their lives. Maybe somebody else's life, too. Now, this weekend's law enforcement slogan, drive sober or get pulled over. Easy to remember, right? Drive sober or get pulled over. Just do it. Just be safe this weekend. Don't drink and drive. Come on, that's for dumb people. We're not dumb. And finally, the Story City Herald. The Story Festival, it's a big one. It's going to take place September 14th through the 16th at various places and times in Story City. Now, this is the 12th annual event, and it's a celebration of, yes, as you might guess, the name Story, storytelling. So it's going to take place on September 14th through the 16th. And one more note, on that same weekend, on September 16th, there is going to be a downtown history stops event. And what this means is that there are going to be reenactors dressed in period costumes who are going to be walking around Broad Street in Story City telling the stories of former business people who lived there and built that community. This is all free of charge. They will come up to you. They will say, hey, and they'll be dressed as 1890s people, 1880s folks, and they'll be saying, hey, here's who built this, here's who did this, and that's always a fun thing. And, you know, I'd like to see that happen here in Ames, Ursula. That would be a fun thing to see people dressed maybe as Wallace Greeley or Cynthia Duff or the Tildens tell us, hey, I built this store and I did this and I did this. That'll be fun. Well, that's what's going on in our news community with all of our newspapers this week.
Thank you. Dennis Hart with the Ames from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
I'll be back.
Thank you. Thank you.
river's here and the water's warm. There's an afternoon thunderstorm. Now the nighttime, it's cooling down. Go to the beach and then we'll go to town. On the summertime we'll live again. In the summertime we'll all be friends. All the summers of the love and minds. All the summers of the suns will shine. Favorite song. Better hurry up, it won't be long. Till we're surfing in the ocean wave. Sun gonna come, we're gonna all be safe. In the summertime we'll live again. In the summertime we'll all be friends. All the summers of the love and minds. On the summers of the suns will shine.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg today, one of your hosts, together here with Dennis Hart. Thank you for listening in. Food at First is a program that provides food to anyone who needs it at 611 Clark Avenue in downtown Ames at the First Christian Church in the basement. And they do that in two ways. They provide a free meal to anyone who wants a delicious meal, no questions asked. And they also have a perishable food pantry at their location. Now, many communities do have food pantries. However, if you go to Food at First, either as a volunteer to help prepare or to serve or as a diner, you will notice something that's a little bit different about Food at First. It's not your average free meal. The meals are very good. Not only is Food at First a collection for free food, it's also a place for local celebrity chefs. Today, three-star chefs are here to talk about this phenomenon that's distinctive to Ames. It's one of the least kept secrets in Ames, is we have great chefs at Food at First. So welcome Dale Vandershaft.
Yes.
And Christine Lang.
Yes.
The third chef is also the executive director of Food at First, Patty Yoder.
Thank you.
Welcome, and thank you for coming by today just to talk with us for a few minutes about the food at Food at First. It's an interesting topic. Patty, for starters, to support a program the scale of Food at First, you must need a lot of food. So where does the food actually come from for this service?
It comes from a variety of local stores and businesses and restaurants. The university is a very good supporter as well. We get deliveries three times a week from Walmart and Sam's Club, and every day from Aldi's and Hy-Vee and Chipotle, Red Lobster, you know, on down the line. Panera, yeah, we have all kinds of local support.
And do you have enough food?
We do. We have lots and lots of food. We try to move it along. As soon as it comes in, we send it back out the door or prepare it for meals.
I've eaten there, too, as well. As I remember, you do have farm-to-table food sometimes, too, that farmers bring.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Especially here in the summer. Local growers, the gardens and little farms and organic farms and everybody that has a little excess or grows for us specifically. Even.
Now, you're open how many days a week?
Every day.
And for how many meals?
We serve one hot meal every single day, always. We never are closed for holidays or weekends or anything.
So you're 365.
We are. Mm-hmm. And the pantry then is open for distribution 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm. So how many volunteers does it actually take to run this operation?
Literally thousands.
Thousands.
Because it's all volunteer. And as you can imagine, to bring the food in, to sort the food, to organize the food, to get it all ready for the pantry. And then for the meals, of course, there's the preparing, the serving, the cleaning up. It's just, and every day takes a lot.
So where do these people come from?
All over, from Ames and surrounding communities mainly. And some are groups, some organizations and different groups. Others are just lots of individuals, lots of students.
There's no one particular profile.
No.
It's all types of people.
Yeah.
As I understand it, part of the way this is organized is that you have squads that work different shifts to do the cooking. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the different squads have different cooks that essentially are the chefs for that squad.
For that day, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and thus the genesis of what I have sometimes heard is a competitive situation down there as to who makes the best food. So let's turn it for a minute to our chefs and ask you, Patty, also to turn on your chef's hat here because
okay.
I understand you're also a chef down there.
Yes.
Again, Dale Vanderschaff. Am
yes.
I pronouncing your name right?
That's correct.
Dale Vanderschaff. Dale, why don't we start with you? What is your specialty when you cook?
Well, you know, my specialty is doing ribs. I decided to do ribs because I like to smoke meat, and I like to do the barbecue. And obviously, to do a barbecue for 80 to 100 people is very difficult to pull off, and especially if you were going to smoke your meat. But I decided that all of the other aspects of a good barbecue we could do as long as I was able to prepare my ribs in the oven, and I still do rubs and so forth. But the traditional barbecue meal, of course, it includes your barbecued meat, in this case ribs, your baked beans, coleslaw, cornbread, and those types of items are pretty traditional for a barbecue. So I thought, well, let's do a barbecue. When I cook, I usually cook on Thursdays at least once a month, and I think people really started to like my barbecued ribs.
Do you have a recipe for the barbecue sauce?
Well, I do for my rub. Everybody who does barbecue has their own thing about how you do a rub.
Uh-huh.
Mine's what I call a sweet and spicy rub, and it's something I've liked, so I decided if I like it, I think other people will too.
You've gotten good results?
Oh, gosh, yes. If I don't do the ribs, we didn't have enough ribs here a couple months ago to really do a rib meal, so I ended up doing chicken, and the first thing people asked was, where are the ribs? And
So when are the ribs?
Pardon me?
When are the ribs?
I do the ribs. I usually do third Thursdays
all
of
right.
the month. Anyhow, it just got started, and this has been going on for probably 3 years now, I'd say.
So I
enjoy cooking, and it's the kind of stuff I like to cook. So,
Patty, how about you? Do you have a specialty?
Mine is kind of a wider range of I do a lot of homemade casseroles and vegetable dishes that people seem to really enjoy, the homey feel of it.
And are they your recipes, the casseroles?
Yes. I used to have a restaurant years ago, and so
okay.
I saved some of those recipes for big groups. And
what's your favorite casserole? Or let's put it this way. What's your most popular casserole?
It's a toss-up between a chicken noodle one and an enchilada casserole.
And Christine Lang.
I have to admit that I am just one person in a team of sustainable agriculture students, mostly graduates, but some undergraduates as well. So I actually prefer to stay in the shadows and let some of my other chefs shine because we cook the third Friday of every month. We tend to do pasta and pestos and then a lot of vegetable stir fries. And we try to focus, again, like Patty said, a lot on vegetable dishes.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a student named Robert Valick who likes to throw in German influences. So we've done schnitzel recently. So I find that for us, we're trying to cook seasonally as much as possible. We also have a small garden that we run and use to supply for our meals.
And this garden is up on Ontario Road, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, this is on Ontario. It's 3626. It's the Trinity Reformed Church.
Mm-hmm.
So they will partner with us to allow us to keep our garden there.
And describe again briefly your team. You're a group of students from the Sustainable Ag Department?
Correct. So we are the Sustainable Agriculture Student Association,
mm-hmm.
and that's primarily graduate students, but we welcome undergraduates. And we work to have garden work days twice a week in the summer going through the end of September, mid-October this year. And that team of co-leaders, I actually have community members, undergrads, and graduate students partnering. So that's been really fun this year. And those volunteers, some of them also partner with us for our meals in the kitchen, and some would just prefer to garden or vice versa.
How did you end up being a chef at Food at First?
For myself, as a member of SASA, I started volunteering at the Garden with my friend Hannah Dankbar, who at the time was serving as the liaison between SASA and Food at First.
SASA is the Sustainable Agriculture.
Correct, mm-hmm. Yes. And I feel that Hannah kind of took me under her wing and mentored me and asked if I'd be interested in the Garden. And we are a democratic group, so I was voted in to be the coordinator on behalf of our organization. But I feel that it was that mentorship that really encouraged me to move forward, because I was actually very nervous about the kitchen portion.
So how do you feel about it now?
I still, again, prefer to be in the shadows, but I enjoy the logistics of being able to make sure everything gets out on time and supporting. We try to work in pairs of chefs. Mm-hmm. So typically I'm working with another chef and I'm happy to let them coordinate the meal. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy, okay, let's make sure everything gets done on time, because people notice if we don't serve at 5:45 sharp.
Patty, how did you end up not only being a chef, but the executive director?
I started as chef about 12 years ago. I worked at a bank, and a friend of mine said to me one day, Patty, you enjoy cooking. You should check out Food at First. So I walked over there after work one day and helped serve the meal and just looked around and asked questions. And the chef that night was Rita Valerie, and she told me that they were in need of chefs. So I went home, and at this time, the program was fairly new, just maybe a year into it. And I looked online, and sure enough, they needed chefs pretty bad. So I signed up. At that time, Food at First had very little funds or donations. You know, we were new. A lot of the head chefs actually had to pay to bring their own food in and, you know, buy their own food. And at the time, I was had a couple kids in college, single mom, you know, maybe couldn't afford it quite myself, but I decided to make something inexpensive and, you know, and do this. And before I even served my first meal, my own church called and said, hey, Patty, we want to get involved in Food at First. If you cook for us, we'll buy the food. And I'm like, perfect. This all worked out great. So that was how I started, and I've cooked once a month ever since, and twice a month because I cook in Nevada, too.
Clearly, it hits the spot for you.
Very much.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Grabbed my heart.
How did you end up being a chef, Dale?
I was involved with the startup at Food at First 13 years ago over at First United Methodist. And at that time, I just pitched in as much as I could, still working full time. And we had a lot of volunteers at that time. And so over time, I just kind of pulled away from the program. But when I retired 7 years ago, a couple of people noticed that I had retired and had some time on my hands. And they said they needed some assistance with the administration of the operation. And I was familiar with nonprofits. So I said, well, I can do that. But ultimately, because I like to cook and I like to eat, they asked if I had any interest in being a chef and heading up a meal. And I said, yeah, I think I can do that too. And so when I saw the volume of food that was coming in through our food pantry program and so forth, it was an easy thing to do because the food was always there. And we were not a soup kitchen. We were doing a full meal, you know, a three or four or five course meal. And it was a wonderful opportunity for me to get engaged with our community and, you know, meet some new people and so forth. So, you know, it's the kind of thing I really like to do. And it all kind of came together.
It is a little bit competitive at this point. I hear not everybody can be a chef at Food at First now. And is that correct, that at this point that being a chef there is a little bit of a distinction?
Well, a little bit. we kind of handpick them because they are in charge of the evening, and so they have to be there from start to finish and make sure everything goes smoothly and well.
Patty, what do you think it is about Food at First that makes it, has turned it into such a kind of a high-quality dining experience?
Well,
I mean, other than the obvious that we have these people here that make ribs recipes and things like that. But what do you think it is about the whole organization that has kind of led to this particular level of quality?
Well, we call it the Food at First magic, for one thing. Just the Ames community or this even surrounding communities that help us, either with donations or with their volunteerism. We couldn't do it without those two things. And the Ames community has just supported us just tremendously. It makes it all work.
Dale, do you have a sense about what the Food at First magic is that Patty referred to?
Well, I think it's beyond the food. I think that's really the magic. It's the community. It's the people we serve. And it really, you know, it's a good feeling. So when you go to Food at First, whether it be for pantry or for the meal, you've come to recognize there is now what I call the Food at First community. We have probably a core of, you know, anywhere from 20 or more people, 25 people who are pretty regular. And that includes not just individuals, but families as well. And
when you say regular, you're talking about people who
people
eat
who
there
probably
or
eat, you know, say more than three or more mm-hmm. times a week. And then, of course, at the market, we have the same thing. But with our new location at First Christian Church, we're able to have people can come in and get a cup of coffee and visit. And I've seen over the years where genuine friendships have been established among our diners and those mm-hmm. people. And you can see it, they're talking around the coffee. And so it's more than food. It's become a real community activity. And I think that's really one of the more important things where people can connect with each other and build relationships. And I think that's really, in some sense, the heart of Food at First, beyond the food.
What every restaurant hopes for.
It, absolutely. It's, they keep coming back.
Yes.
They keep coming back. So.
You still take volunteers, Patty?
Absolutely. We always need volunteers.
So if somebody wants to join this community, how does that work?
Yes, they can just go to our website at foodatfirst.com and they click on the sign up page and it'll direct them to sign up. It shows all the times and dates available.
Give us the website again.
Foodatfirst.com.
Foodatfirst.com. Again, the meals are at the First Christian Church, which in the basement, which
Correct.
Is 611 Clark Avenue.
Correct.
Again, the meals are for anybody.
Absolutely. I was going to say that. Everybody is welcome.
And when is the food pantry open?
It's open on Mondays and Thursdays at 4:45 and Saturdays at 10 a.m.
That's just food to take.
Correct. Groceries. Uh-huh. Yeah.
What would you say has been the most satisfying comment you've ever heard about your food?
Well, for me, I think it's last night again, the best ribs I've ever had.
Last night, huh?
Yes, last night.
How about you, Patty?
Oh, gosh. Just people that thank profusely for the delicious meals.
Mm-hmm. And Christine, how about you?
I think for me, it's always fun at the end of the night. We try to cook extras for people to take home. And when you have someone walk up and say, this was so good, I have to take some home to my friend or mm-hmm. deliver this to my daughter or my mother or mm-hmm. something to that effect. So I think that's really satisfying when they recognize the quality of food and they want to share that with others who mm-hmm. weren't able to make it.
And do you get that comment a lot?
I feel like we do. So uh-huh. I think the goal is always to be able to send stuff home with people.
They make some fabulous vegetable dishes.
Okay, and what days do you cook?
We cook the third Friday of every month, so our next meal will be September 15th.
Okay, and how about you, Patty?
Mine's the fourth Thursday.
Okay. Is there a schedule at Food at First telling which cooks are cooking when?
Yeah, there's a calendar.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Patty Yoder, the Executive Director of Food at First here in Ames, and two of the other celebrity chefs, Dale Vanderschaff and Christine Lang. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Broad spirit comes back along the way, comes to me red, black, with a lot to say. She sit my tail down, pulled a wishbone wide. She reamed my head out along the way. So lonely, I can't even cry. lay me out flat. She pinned my tail down, pulled the wishbone wide. She reamed my head out, her dirt rained dark down. Can't even cry high.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening in. Dennis Hart is also here, my co-host.
Good to be back. It's been 20 minutes.
And we were just talking to the chefs of Food at First. And as they were leaving, they wanted me to tell you that a really big part of the secret of Food at First that they forgot to mention on the air was that many people that aren't chefs there that actually bring homemade cookies and breads with their own special recipes. And Christine Lang wanted to me to say in particular when they cook that Helen Gunderson's fabulous bread is part of their meal and how much they appreciate. So thank you, Helen. Okay, Susan Guiasta is here, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Welcome back.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
It's always really nice to have you here. So tell us what is going – give us a municipal report.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say we opened the new water plant this past Saturday with ribbon cutting and open house. And let me tell you, the turnout was phenomenal. It was amazing. It is so good to see how supportive this community is of these milestone events. We had thought that we would have maybe 800 or 900 people. We had more than 1,300.
Wow.
And honestly, 800 or 900 was very optimistic for us. Typically in an open house, it would be much lower. So the turnout was phenomenal. The questions, the excitement, the kudos. I mean, it was just such a fabulous event. We know that because it was so popular, we could not accommodate everybody on the tours. There were people that just couldn't wait, and they went and they said, "Well, we'll check this out later."
Yeah.
Just a reminder.
I was one of those.
Were you? Just a reminder that our new water plant will give tours. You can schedule a tour with the water plant simply by calling them at 515-239-5150. We are looking to schedule some events in the future that maybe are sort of a mini open house kind of thing. Just because the community outpouring has been so great, we want to keep that momentum moving forward. And we really are so proud of this facility.
That's great. So but that you didn't run out of water that day.
We did not run out of water. And we did not run out of cookies, which I was worried.
Susan, just briefly, could you talk about what's going to happen to the old plant and that site there?
So parts of the old site, the old water plant is experienced a series of additions, and parts of it are over 100 years old.
Uh-huh.
The water plant facility itself will be deconstructed over time, yet there are some offices that will remain there. So you'll see it return some of it to green space, and some of it will remain, we call it, on the utility campus, which is right next to the Ames Power Plant right there in right in central downtown.
Uh-huh.
And so most people probably won't notice much of a difference, but gradually you'll see the return of some green space.
Great.
Just some other things. Just a reminder, if you're looking for something to do tonight, Friday, September 1st, the beginning of the month, we're doing a free movie in Banchell Park featuring The Princess Bride. This is a generational favorite. This hard to believe. Now, have you seen The Princess Bride?
I have not.
Now, have you seen The Princess Bride?
Yes, I did. And you're right. It's not my generation, but maybe it was 30 years ago.
Unbelievable. 30 years old. The Princess Bride was released, and now it's back. We'll be showing it for free at Banchell Park today about 8:15. 8:15 to about 10:15. There'll be free popcorn and cookies while they last. Come with your family and friends. Bring a blanket. First come, first serve seating. It will be just a fun, nice event, kind of a kickoff to school, get back into the fall routine kind of thing. And it is Labor Day weekend, so mm-hmm. we know a lot of people are looking for some kind of fun family activities to take them into the weekend. So maybe if that works with your schedule, we'll see you at Banchell Park tonight.
I think I'm going to get dressed up as a princess and go.
Well, there is a costume contest.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's always exciting. And speaking of Labor Day weekend, also just a reminder that City of Ames offices are closed on Labor Day. That includes the public library and bookmobile, our resource recovery plant, the community center and weight room, the municipal pool, and the Ames ISU ice arena. However, it is the last day of the season for the Furman Aquatic Center. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the day that we say goodbye to outdoor swimming, and it's supposed to be very warm this weekend. Okay. So we're anticipating they will have just a wonderful weekend of swimming.
Bye-bye, lazy river.
Yes, goodbye. Water walking, lap swimming. We'll see you next Memorial Day. That's how that cycle goes.
But the golf course will be open. Homewood will be open.
Yeah, Homewood actually stays open all the way through October, and depending on weather, has been open occasionally into November. So we will.
So this is what I learned this summer.
Okay.
If you go to the Aquatic Center at 7 o'clock, it closes at 8.
Yes.
Yeah. If you go at 7 p.m., you kind of have the lazy river to yourself.
There is actually a lot of water walking.
It's very relaxing. Yeah. Well, I just float around.
Yeah.
It's very relaxing.
That's kind of my secret is to go
okay, see you
at
there.
The last hour, because a lot of people seem to kind of pack
it's
up
It's kind
and
of
go.
A magic hour.
It's the perfect time, and it's getting dusky out. And, it is absolutely. So let's keep that our little secret.
I don't think it's a secret now,
okay,
though.
Don't
That's
tell
the
anybody.
Problem.
Okay, so nobody else tell anybody. let's see. So much going on. Oh, I was told Mark Anson, our civil engineer, could not make it this morning, mm-hmm. but he always likes to give those construction updates. We are trying hard to get those final construction projects done. School has started. Construction season seems to be dragging on. As you recall, last time we were here, Mark was talking a lot about the South 4th, South 3rd Street project.
Yeah.
They are looking to open up South 3rd Street from Grand to Duff. Next Friday.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And now if you recall, that street was completely torn up. There was no street left.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge project. It has been done in phases. It has been understandably inconvenient for people. We are very aware of that. And it has caused people to detour. I always like to look at the bright side and say, well, maybe you can explore a new part of Ames that you haven't seen before. Get off the beaten path. You know, it's always a nice idea to take a different way to work or to the store. I've heard that that helps increase your brain growth. So all sorts of advantages to our construction that people have probably not even considered in the past. But that will be something people really look forward to is having that thoroughfare back open. So excited
kind
about that.
And, of course, Clark reopened recently.
Clark did
and
reopen.
And that was a big deal, and that's a great project. You did a fine job on that street.
Yes, people will notice.
Susan did it all herself.
You did it yourself,
amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
No, but I followed that over the past year. It's been very difficult and long, and it looks good. And
It does. Nice. I drove over it the other day. It's so smooth. We're going to do some experimental things with bike lanes on there, and we'll bring Mark back to talk a little bit about that. There are bike lanes on Clark on that stretch between Main and Lincoln Way. And again, it's to familiarize drivers and vehicles on how to interact with bike lanes, what to do. We hope that in time you'll start seeing more of those. Sometimes vehicles, when they encounter road markings that they're unfamiliar with, they don't always react the appropriate way. So we have to do some education on that. Telling people again, don't drive in the bike lanes. They're not turning lanes. Mm-hmm. Give bikers plenty of space. And we really are working hard, to become a more bike-friendly community, more respectful of multimodal forms of transportation. Mm-hmm. And that includes pedestrians, public transit riders, bicyclists, motorcyclists, everybody.
Yeah, that is definitely something that's happening in Ames now.
Yeah.
Okay. Two more minutes.
Okay. So just want to remind people, we are continuing enforcement on parking in the South Campus neighborhoods. As a directive by the Ames City Council, we have hired some additional community officers to work specifically on parking enforcement in South of Campus neighborhoods. They have always been signed for parking restrictions, limited overnight parking, opposite side of street parking, and the signs, we admit, could be more clear. But for those people who use those neighborhoods to park, they really need to be aware of limitations. Certain streets have 2-hour limitations. Certain streets have 4-hour limitations. And perhaps those have not been strictly enforced in the past. They may notice a change this year. So if you're somebody that relies on neighborhood parking to get to class or to work in the campus town area, just a reminder to be much more cognizant of the signage that's out there. And we'll see how that goes. We're not trying to ticket people. We are just trying to enforce the existing rules on parking that exist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
So much going on in September, busy month. Yard Waste Free Days are coming up. Please check our website for those. October, November, and one early December Saturday. So people ask about those. And the one last thing, people ask, when is Halloween? When is the official trick-or-treating night? I know it seems early, but mark your calendars. Trick-or-treating the names, Tuesday, October 31st on Halloween.
October 31st, okay.
On Halloween. Recommended hours from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m.
Okay.
So everybody have a great September.
Thank you, and congratulations on your most recent second annual Rummage Rampage. Good work, guys.
Thank you. That was fabulous.
Yeah. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Mr. Dennis Hart, great addition to the team. And thank you for listening. Earlier in the show, we heard from Dennis with a roundup of news from the Ames Tribune, Patty Yoder, Executive Director of Food at First, and two of the other celebrity chefs, Dale Vanderschaft and Christine Lang. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. noon and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI possible and makes it meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.